What do we find at the intersection of faith and the world? Our new podcast, Crossroads, explores this question in thought-provoking conversations featuring guests from around the world who are seeking to live faithfully in the public square. This is a safe space to discuss politics, technology, and our responsibilities as citizens. Pull up a chair and meet us as we search for a better way forward. Welcome to Crossroads, where we discuss the intersection of sacred and civic. I'm your host, Joe Nygaard-Owens. Today on the show, we're excited to have Dr. Joe Yoon, Artificial Intelligence and Innovation Architect at the University of Pittsburgh and CEO of Blue Fox Labs. Welcome, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
We're delighted that you're here today. And also joining us is Dr. Sonia Komen. Along with serving the Cathedral as our Director of Digital Engagement, Sonia is also a noted scholar in the areas of business, art, and technology. Sonia, it's so good to have you on here too.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here with you both.
On our last episode, I was with Randy in his office, but this week we are recording online. If you have followed me at the Cathedral at all, you know that I live in Cleveland, Ohio and travel to DC. And this week I am recording from Cleveland, Ohio. Joe, where are you joining us from?
I am joining you all from currently rainy Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And Sonia, where are you?
I am in Washington, D.C. I am, in fact, sitting right here at the Cathedral.
Fantastic. Joe and Sonia, join us today as we start our exploration of artificial intelligence and what it means for us as people of faith. This is such a hot topic these days, and as I've been talking to people, as I've been researching, as I've been diving into it myself, I have come up with so many questions. So first, this question is for Joe. What is AI? And we're going for the brief definition. And specifically, can you isolate generative AI from what preceded it and other forms of machine learning?
Sure. So I guess the simplest definition I could give of AI is it's having computers mimic humans, right, in some form or fashion. And the difference between traditional AI and what we have today with generative AI is that traditional AI is computers programmed in the way that we typically kind of think computers are programmed. Humans give computers rules, and if we give the correct rules, then the computers will do the right thing. And if they do the wrong thing, then we can interpret the rules that we gave it and see, oh, I made a mistake in my code, and so I'll just fix that, and then the computer will do what we want it to do. That's traditional AI. It's very understandable by humans. It's programmed by humans.
So that sounds pretty linear.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Great.
Now, generative AI, again, this is pretty big oversimplification, but a big jump has happened with generative AI where it's humans taking symbols. And what I mean by symbols is things like words, could be images, it could be things that humans understand, right? So let's just take words. And the computer actually takes those words and first transforms those words into this mathematical multidimensional representation. Now, I know that sounds completely confusing, but it's what it is.
Okay. So if we're thinking, so the first one was very linear and this one sounds more like a 3D model.
Yeah. So the computer is basically taking our human generated symbols, in this case, words, and then it's creating this kind of model, or it's not even a model, it's this environment that's easier for the computer to work with, but that we as humans don't understand because we can't think in multi-dimensions. And so we're already making a huge jump there that is difficult for us as humans to then be able to interpret later, right?
Okay.
And then so once it does that jump, it uses mathematical functions, and we understand math, but it uses those mathematical functions to use that space to do things like have a computer just create essays or songs out of nowhere. And the reality is that we as humans, we understand the mathematical functions that we're throwing in, but we don't fully understand how, using that multidimensional space, the computer is spitting out these essays and spitting out these songs.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that we understand parts of this, but if something goes wrong, it's not like traditional AI where we can go in and be like, oh, I understand why it went wrong. It doesn't work like that anymore. And that's kind of the big jump. And again, oversimplified, but the big jump with regards to generative AI.
So that makes sense as to why we feel okay when we're typing out a text message and it wants to autofill for us versus when we're putting in something, a prompt into ChatGPT and asking it to create something totally new. We understand how it came to the autofill, but we don't necessarily understand how it's pulling all the words and images to fill in our prompt on ChatGPT.
Well, I'll say this, yes and no, because actually modern day autotype on your phone is actually run by this newer technology. It's gotten an upgrade, and that's why the autotype is better on your phone now than what it used to be. So it has actually been infiltrated into our phones.
So we're already using it.
Yes, yes.
AI prides itself on its accuracy, right? This is one of its major selling points, that it is somehow more accurate than when a human can do. But on the other hand, it's also one of its biggest problems. As it becomes better, one way in which one criterion that we use to understand whether or not it's improving, whether or not it's usable, is its degree of accuracy.
Yeah, and so this is the problem that we have as kind of, I've mentioned this traditional AI and then this new generative type of AI. So traditional AI, it's known for its accuracy because, again, once humans give the computers enough rules that are accurate, then the output is always accurate. And so that's something that, you know, computer scientists have prided themselves in with regards to how you used to do this. This newer type of generative AI, because we don't fully understand how it's doing all these pieces, it's really variable as to how accurate it will be. There's times where it can be super accurate, and then there's times where it could, and it's just typically called a hallucination nowadays, even though that's, I think, more of a marketing term, but there's times where it's just not accurate, and you can't really exactly predict when it will or won't be accurate. Now, you can do these kind of hacks to make sure that it's as accurate as possible, but again, there's still a lot of unknown with this. It's a brand new branch of computer science that we're going into right now or have been in right now.
I think we can also reflect on the input and then the output in the process, right? So in a way, at the user level, we have the prompt, right? And there's all kinds of classes that I see everywhere on the internet about how to improve our ability to write an accurate prompt so that the results are better. But then at the other end of it, we have the data that it feeds off in order to create the output. And that is both fascinating and a little terrifying because, you know, the output is going to be as good or as inaccurate or as biased as the input. And I'm thinking about, you know, what kind of output we're going to get with AI as we live in a world that is increasingly flooded with AI content. If those inputs are incomplete, if they are intentionally or unintentionally accurate, and the extent to which we are going to distort reality, perhaps distort history with the AI-generated content that we're faced with.
Yeah, Sonia, this is such an interesting thought that I've been having as well. So the data that current generative AI is trained upon is basically the whole internet or large portions of the internet. And so you have the good and you have the bad, right? There's already erroneous information on the internet and a lot of it. And that goes into the multidimensional space that I mentioned right now. And what's weird is what people may say, well, why don't you just choose the good stuff and take out the bad stuff? You can't do that right now. That's not how this works. If we could do that, we would, but it's just not possible right now. But now that you have these generative AI large language models, they are creating new content that will eventually go in as the data of the future models is what you're talking about. So if there's people that are using AI to create more false content or more terrible content, it'll just make it worse, right? And then you have this kind of feedback loop that could go either, you know, really well, really bad, or somewhere in the middle, right?
Ooh, this is sounding scary. This is sounding like a world I don't want to be in. So let's pull back a second. There, we could go down this rabbit hole of fear and what could go wrong. And this is where we need our legislators to step up, where we need to have more oversight. All sorts of things need to happen to safeguard AI. But what are some of the good aspects of it?
The amazing thing about this whole throwing everything into this kind of multidimensional space representation is that AI has become incredibly creative in the sense that, you know, you probably hear of stories where medical researchers are finding new potential drugs and new potential cures to diseases that they never were able to before. And the reason why is because once you throw all of this data into that multidimensional space, you can start just asking these general questions, and then the computer is just doing this infinite number of comparisons and almost like experiments at a scale and a speed that a human could never do, and then sending you back ideas. So it's like having a million or more medical researchers in the room with you, and then they're just giving you all these brainstorming ideas at the same time. And so you can think that, like, even things like climate change and all these various issues, these things could potentially be accelerated with regards to finding solutions because of this technology. So there's a lot of real positive aspects to generative AI and what's coming through this type of science.
Another wonderful application of AI is in the realm of predictive analytics. With AI, you can use these algorithms to take into consideration all kinds of different sets of data and all kinds of criteria in a complex way, in such a complex way, in fact, that we as humans cannot keep in mind at any given time. And that can help inform decision making in a variety of fields. You have examples of predictive analytics in healthcare, also in our defense and military, even in business, in terms of better decision making on the market. And that can create healthier decisions, healthier engagements. And I loved what you said, Joe, about AI's ability to be creative. I think that's a very controversial thought because, you know, thinking of science fiction and how we are sort of programmed to think of AI by all the movies and all the novels we've read about artificial intelligence, we're still wondering whether AI can be creative, whether or not it can have some form of self-reference, right? Which is a sign of perhaps consciousness. The other day, I asked the ChatGPT to create an image or to describe a painting that it would one day create, where the image is very much in its own identity, where it reflects back on itself. An image in its own style, so to speak. And the result was imagining a landscape made out of binary code with mountains and rivers. And then on the sky above this landscape floated the watermark of the ChatGPT logo.
That is a beautiful self-referential piece of art created that ChatGPT may one day create.
Yeah, and I think it conflates a little bit these categories of authorship and ownership, right? Because in a way, that binary code, is it really owned by ChatGPT, given that the input is, as you were saying, Joe, all of the internet? And I think that's it's kind of telling in terms of current debates relating to copyright infringement and to intellectual property.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say this. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't have any legal background. But what's really interesting is from a technical standpoint, I know this sounds like totally different things, but, you know, when you go and search on Google, right, how does it work? Well, it creates a representation of the whole internet, which is typically called an index. And that representation allows you to quickly type in something And then it'll show you a list of web pages that are relevant to your search, right? Mm-hmm. And that index, is that index a copyright violation because it searched the whole internet and created this representation that allows you to search quickly? Well, in some senses, even though it's a different mechanism, the mm-hmm. multidimensional space mechanism is different than how the index is structured. But in a sense, it's a very similar thing. You crawl the whole internet, you get kind of a representation of the whole internet. It's just not serving you a bunch of links on a web page as a result. It's serving you an essay, or it's serving you a song, or it's serving you an image. And so that's what's really interesting is, like, where is that violation occurring with regards to ownership or with regards mm-hmm. to copyright? Again, I don't know the answer legally, but from a technical standpoint, it's really interesting.
I did a search the other day as I was preparing for this podcast. I was trying to search for AI analogies because I'm like, oh, this will be really helpful for people listening to give them some analogies. So I type into Google, what are some AI analogies? And I got nothing. So then I turn to my AI browser and I type in, give me some helpful AI analogies to share with people on a podcast. And I had this hugely populated list with references and links. And it was really amazing to see the difference between the two.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a massive evolution of our, not just our web experience, but our computer experience, right? I always say to people, and always meaning just for the last 2 years, I've been telling people, this feels like when the internet first started. And I was a teen when the internet first started and nobody understood it. You know, I was running these bulletin board services from my parents', you know, phone line. And, you know, I was doing all this stuff and it just felt so exciting, but also a little bit kind of scary as to what is this and where is this going? This feels very similar, but the technology is far more powerful. So it is really kind of, we're living in a time where we're seeing a massive technological jump.
I wonder if we are going to understand AI's own language as AI becomes better at what it does. You know, right now in visual generative AI, for example, we still see all kinds of errors, right? We ask these systems to create an image of just an apple on a table, right? And the apple will be slightly floating, right? Gravitation will not be part of the computation. but it's learning very fast. And I think that, you know, very, very soon we will see that these errors don't occur any longer. And then, you know, it'll be very hard to distinguish between an AI-generated image and a real image, as it were. But I think that there is something about AI feeding on AI, you know, and where that leads us. You know, will it really lead to a dilution of quality, or will it actually develop some kind of system of signs or some kind of language of its own? And as we are overwhelmed increasingly with AI-generated content, can we even detect those AI-specific details or signs? I was reading the other day that now there is a beta test of actually recreating human voice. You can just get a little bit of someone's voice recorded, and then the AI will recreate that voice exactly, and even in different languages.
Yes. Yes. Actually, I've deepfaked my voice already many times, and it's pretty perfect. So my wife can't tell the difference when I use the AI Joe Yoon and me.
So again, when I've talked to people about AI, I find that folks fall into three different camps. There are those who are super excited. They are early adopters. They're ready to get integrated. They want to dive in and they just do it. Yes, they understand that there are some hesitations and fears, but those aren't enough to stop them. So then there are those in the middle who are, you know, a little bit nervous, but with enough coaxing, with enough learning, they'll say, okay, let me wade in. And then there are those on the other extreme who are like, no way, no how. I don't want any part of this. But Joe, as you noted with the internet, we didn't have that luxury. I mean, yes, you could for a while say, no, 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 I'm not going to do this crazy internet thing. I don't want to be a part of this. But that's where our life is. I don't know how people function off the grid anymore. I always have my cellular device next to me to look things up or be connected. And so here we are in the AI revolution, and things are moving at an even faster pace than they did with the advent of the internet.
Yeah.
And my hope is that with this podcast episode, maybe those of you listening out there, if you don't fall into that first category of early adopters, maybe you're in those other two categories, and this will help you take a few more steps down the road. Maybe you're going to start searching things on ChatGPT, using it to create your grocery list. So there are lots of ways that we can use it to make our lives easier. And then what can we do with that time?
One thing that I'm pretty sure of is that just like the internet, this is going to be like our full reality in the future. And you're not going to be able to not do it. I mean, I know there's people in the earth that don't use the internet right now, and that exists still. But I mean, it's going to be rare.
Yeah.
And with regards to this technology, the people that use it and embrace it, they're basically going to be supercharged. It's almost going to be like you have superpowers compared to what was possible in the past. Mm-hmm. And so those that are kind of slow or hesitant to adopt it, it may be detrimental. But at the same time, I'm not saying that this stuff is all perfect and it's 100% good and that's why you should jump in.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that I think we have to be realistic and understand that this is our future. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be just kind of like how the internet is with regards to our reality today.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as we experiment with AI, we can learn a little bit more about what it means to be human.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is it that we can do that AI cannot do? All right. And maybe it's creativity. Maybe it's our imagination. Maybe it's our emotions, our feelings, our sense of what's good and what's wrong.
Or as Sam Wells, who preached for us a few months ago, said, it's faith, hope, and love.
Yes.
Those qualities are innate to us, and they are such a huge part of who we are as Christians that this is what we as humans can offer the world that AI may not be able to.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and I have to say that... Well, on a pragmatic standpoint, I do think AI is probably going to take a lot of the technical things that we do and just do it for us. So we're probably going to have more time on our hands. But from a maybe more religious standpoint or spiritual standpoint, I mean, I believe in God. I believe, you know, the reason why I try to love people and to be kind and to be helpful is because I have a responsibility to do so. And I've been designed to do so. But I do believe in the future. With regards to AI, I think it'll give us more time to be able to care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that may sound really naive or just way too optimistic, but I can say this right now. I'm kind of an expert in AI, and it's helped me to be way more productive. And I have more time on my hands now because of the technologies. Uh-huh. And I have been using that time to spend more time with my family. And so I do think that there could be a future in which this brings us an opportunity to spend more time caring for one another. And I think that's important for us to do, not just as, you know, spiritual people, but just as people, right? And I would hope for that kind of future.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Joe.
And that is a choice, right? Which I think it's really refreshing and beautiful to hear. Because when we are faced with a new technology that's scary, that pushes us into the unknown, we feel like we don't have a choice, right? And that we are no longer in control. But what you just said, Joe, makes us realize that actually, if we do have freed up time, right, then it's our choice how we're going to use that.
Mm. As we're wrapping up, I'd like to ask our guests, where do you find hope? What is hopeful about AI in the world?
I'm still very hopeful because, well, one, I think we have to be. But secondly, I believe that we do kind of determine our destiny with this stuff. And so, you know, we need to have very positive attitudes and push ahead, not being naive, but I think we have a responsibility to have hope for our my kids and our generations to come.
Right.
I am hopeful too, Joe, in terms of how we can help each other make this better. and yes, in a way, legislation and regulation is just one answer, right? I think that we need society as a whole to step in and be a part of this conversation. And I think that's why today's conversation is so wonderful to me, because here we are at the cathedral having this conversation about AI. I think this is exactly the kind of discussion that we need as a society, because we need all of these different actors to be a part of the solution, right? The legislators, the ones who create AI, the computer scientists, but then regular people, the users as well. Mm-hmm. And it's that difference, right, between law and ethics. And I think we need both of those and more to make sure that it stays on track and that it helps us, right? That it's safe, but that it's also beneficial, right? I mean, Joe, you were asking about what's good about it, right? Because we can so easily identify all of the dangers, all of the threats, all of the pitfalls, right? But it's really good in many ways. It can really help. Mm-hmm. And if anything, because it can do certain things that we cannot do, it also pushes our limits.
It does. All right. Thank you so much, Joe and Sonia, for joining us in this really engaging discussion of AI. I hope everyone learned something today, that they are excited to try something new, maybe reach out to someone if they are already really into AI. You can help someone else come along a little bit more. And maybe we even alleviated a few fears. For our next episode, we are so excited to share excerpts from the conversation between the cathedral's canon historian, John Meacham, and former Congresswoman Liz Cheney. If you're listening at the time this episode drops, you can still purchase a ticket for the event on our website and watch either in person if you are in the DC area or online via streaming. Thank you for listening to Crossroads, and until next time, peace be with you.